always correct, as long as you're not talking political correctness. Bob McCowan in Primetime Sports. Now, on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Hour number two of the radio program for this Monday, March the 2nd, 2014, the worst day in the year for me, trade deadline day.
You didn't have to do anything special this year.
I didn't do anything special even when I was involved with it.
Why do you hate it? But
tell them how stupid they were.
But that's what used to make you mad, was that they...
It still makes me mad. It makes me mad that they spend all the money and the time that they do to chase nothing. This is It's nonsensical, and my friend Shannon is here, who's, you know, he's a hockey guy.
I was there.
What he does.
You know,
he's part of the brain trust today. Down there.
Yeah, part
well,
of
no,
the,
no, no.
the great brain
no, I,
trust.
I don't know about that. I'm just happy to be here, guys.
I'm just happy to be here.
Yes, happy to be here.
Here or anywhere?
Anywhere, actually. Bob.
Anywhere? Yeah. But there.
Beats the alternative.
It does beat the alternative, Stephen. You know. But it's.
Have you ever thought about getting a real job?
Why would I ever do that?
Exactly.
Come on. Have you?
I understand.
Have you?
No.
No, exactly. Come on. We're all... I've been telling
I had people, one for a while, at least.
I've been telling people for 40 years I play in the sandbox of life. Why would I even want to get out?
Hang on a second. What was the real job you had?
Yeah, yeah.
I'm missing something.
You sell shoes or something?
No, I started out in the golf business. I used to work 60, 70, 80 hours a week, standing behind a counter. Getting clubs out for members.
I don't remember that from the Bobumentary. We should have added.
Well, there
to
was
it.
A lot of things in the Bobumentary that were ignored.
Do another one; it'll win another award.
Yes, the pro shop
Bob
years.
Two. That Bob two didn't win an award.
No, that didn't win. Bob one didn't win an award.
Oh, well, it should have.
No, the sequel. Sequel's always like The Godfather. Godfather two is better than Godfather one. The second one will be better.
Well, if I get
the Bobfather,
we'll get somebody better to write it, and then it'll be great. By the way, Stephen Brunt is here, and John Shannon as well.
Oh, we're just happy to be here.
Mm-hmm.
So, was there anything you'd like to discuss today that happened today? Did anybody improve themselves? Maybe Anaheim.
Anaheim, I think, improved their defense. I think Detroit, over the last two or three days, improved themselves with the addition of Eric Cole.
No, I'm talking about today.
I think Tampa might have, with their addition of Braden Coburn on defense at 3:30 this morning, something silly like that.
Maybe Montreal a little bit.
I am not convinced of that.
Okay.
I am not convinced of that. But I was not a Jeff Petrie fan from the beginning. I think they have Sergei Gonchar and Tom Gilbert, who are comparable defensemen, same ilk.
He's not He's okay.
You know,
they give up a second round pick and maybe as high as a third.
Yeah.
But it could be a fifth too, depending.
Yep. There was a lot of that today. Oh, conditional picks. Well, if they win on a Tuesday and have ice cream on Wednesday, it becomes a third round
pick. Well, but that becomes the flavor of these proceedings, you know? One team does it and everybody goes, oh, that's an interesting way to do it. Let's put a condition in there just to mess with everybody's head.
Yep.
So we got what we usually got, 20-some-odd selections, 40-some-odd players, and really it's just a bunch of junk being traded for a bunch of junk.
Tweaks. There was no, there was, in my opinion, you know, the best tweaking deal last year ended up being Marian Gaborik going from Columbus to Los Angeles, and he scored 12 playoff goals. There wasn't anybody of that ilk, like that big contract that went, and people are just afraid of big money right now.
Yeah, because
that's just the fact.
Because they're looking beyond the horizon and saying it's going to be flat, right? It's, you know, we're
or lower.
Yeah.
So that's what's scary people. Now Gabrick's contract expired, so it was easier for Lombardi to do it. But that to me is what today was all about. Is If you wanted a player, you didn't want to bring any money back of any sort. So that's why the picks ended up becoming a second round, a fifth round, a conditional two, whatever it was.
The Toronto Maple Leafs got rid of David Clarkson, Cody Franson, Daniel Winnick, and Mike Santorelli.
And Corbinian Holzer.
No, but all before the deadline.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Not before today.
Before today.
And then made a couple of moves today, Holzer and Jokinen. Here's the Senior Vice President, General Manager of the Toronto Maple Leafs, Dave Nonis, to discuss these things. Are you exhausted?
Yeah, I've had enough.
Surrender.
Yep. It's always good to get this day over with.
So the interesting part of this for you this year was that most of your work came in the days and weeks prior to the deadline. When you get to deadline day, did you still have a lot of things on the table that you thought you might be able to accomplish?
We had a couple. I mean, we were really looking to try to move the players that we did move. We felt that with Jokinen, I made him a promise that if he came here and worked hard and did what we asked him, that we'd try to get him to a contender, which we were able to do. And with Corby, same thing. You know, he's really been a pretty good player for us this year. He's had a lot of growth as a player. He's a UFA, and for him to get a chance to play in the playoffs, we thought we get an asset back and then put him in a good spot. So those were our primary goals today. Did we talk about other players and other possibility? Yeah, we did. And we went down the road with a couple teams on different players, but there wasn't a fit in terms of either money or the proper assets coming back.
Now, I'm going to ask you questions that, you know, you're going to expect me to ask you, but so does the audience expect me to ask you this. The real interest, as you would understand, in terms of the Maple Leaf fan base, is your bigger name guys. And we know the two players specifically, one is a winger, one is a defenseman, that everybody wants to know about. Are there conversations that started over the last couple of weeks, let's say, David, that might lead to something happening in the off season?
Well, you never know. And for the players that you're referring to or others, I mean, we made it fairly clear that we're open to discussing moving players that are under contract or even players that might be restricted that aren't under contract yet, if it made sense for us. But that really isn't new. I mean, I know there's been a lot made of that, but it's not new. If there are trades that make us better and we think it's going to help us long term, then we'll look to pursue those. And I think maybe just a little bit more vigorously now, given how we performed, than we have in the past. But it's not a fire sale. We have some good players that have underperformed, but a lot of teams have interest in some of those players. So we'll see how it plays out over the next couple months.
How is your appetite to bringing back bigger money again? I mean, lots of stories going out there that if you were to make a deal for certain players, there was an expectation that money would have to come back. And after the Horton deal, do you still have, be honest, in one way, do you still have the opportunity and you're still given permission to bring money back?
If it makes sense in terms of building our team, then we haven't been told, you know, that we can or cannot. I mean, we have a budget like everyone else. We have a cap that we work under like everyone else. And if we can make things fit and make our team better and improve for the long haul, then we would do it. So I guess I'm not sure if I'm answering your question correctly, but would we bring back players that make a significant money? I think every team in the league that has a chance to win is going to have players like that. Just want to make sure that other players that fit in your long-term plans.
We were just talking before you came on, Dave, about the prospect of a flat cap number for next year, or maybe even a little lower cap number for next year, whether that had put a bit of a chill in the air this year in terms of people, in terms of teams taking back money, you know, cap money. Is that, did you sense that out there in the marketplace right now?
Maybe a little bit. I do think it affected teams taking contracts, whether retaining salary, whether that was impacted or not. I don't know, maybe a little bit, but I think that a lot of teams were looking for expiring contracts, and there's different reasons for that. Some teams have lots of LTI room right now, but know that they're going to be in cap purgatory next year, so they didn't want to take contracts on, and other teams just don't know what the cap number is going to be next year. So there is some people that are would rather wait into the summer to once they know what the cap's going to be to make their decisions going forward.
With Dave Nonis, the senior vice president, general manager of the Toronto Maple Leafs, John mentioned Horton in passing. David, I'd like to get a little bit more specific with the acquisition of that deal. It seems clear to me that the benefit to the Toronto Maple Leafs potentially in that deal is if you're a cap team. It seems to me that if you're tearing it down and going to kind of rebuild this thing, you're probably not going to be a cap team. And so I surmised on Friday that maybe the Horton acquisition could be used in the future by the Toronto Maple Leafs to provide an asset for a team that is right at the cap. Do you believe that's possible?
In terms of moving the player?
Yes. Moving the contract.
I don't know if that's something that we would consider or not. The one thing that it does for us is it gives you ability to yes, you have to be at the cap to utilize the cap space, but you also could be at the cap for a very short time in order to invoke LTI and use that cap space, whether it's for your own players or maybe bringing in other teams' players that they can't afford at this point. So there's different ways of using that space, and it doesn't mean it's going to be used in September. I mean, I think that we may not be in a position to use it, but it's available to us, and it gives us plenty of options.
So the answer is you haven't contemplated the possibility of moving that contract in order to acquire a talent that you might be able to use in exchange, you know, reverse the scenario with Columbus.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a possibility, but I think it's a remote one. The way the LTI works, you still have to have that room when you take the player on.
I understand.
And so for us, if someone's willing to give us something of value, why wouldn't they just give it to us with the cap space that we've created?
Over the last month or so, obviously, with the plight of your hockey team, there have been lots of stories and rumors about players on your team that would be out the door, wouldn't be out the door. Some of them, including guys like Jonathan Bernier, I don't believe you really shopped, but people were phoning you for it. And so I'm just wondering if there's a message out there for the fans and even for a guy like Bernier that says, hey, you know what, we weren't shopping you. We were listening, but we weren't shopping, and you know what, we still like you.
Listen, our job is to listen on players. I don't think it's one where our players are that sensitive that they don't understand that people call, and especially ones that they're confident in their ability. You know, a guy like Jonathan Bernier or any Nazem Kadri for that matter, those are quality players that people are going to call on. It's our job to see what teams will be willing to give us for mm-hmm. those players. There's a big difference, and I said this earlier today, between wanting to trade someone and willing to. And there's those guys and some others are players that we would you consider? Of course you would. But we're not trying to get rid of them, and we're not trying to move them out.
Are you satisfied with what you've been able to accomplish, not just today, but over the last couple of weeks?
You know, it's been a pretty good few weeks for us, but there's a lot of work left to do with what we've created. We put a lot of picks into the system. Picks are great, but you have to turn them into players. Mm-hmm. So now, we have to make sure that we do a good job of hitting on not just our first two picks in the first round, but other picks that we have available throughout the draft. We have to, we have to put a lot of prospects in the system, and all that Mark Hunter, Dave Morris, and his staff understand the importance of this draft and the next one. And we have 10 picks now in the 2016 draft. So it's there's a lot of work left for us to do. We've set the table up a little bit, but we're not anywhere near done. And we understand that for us to build this into a competitive group, we have to hit on these picks.
Is there a consensus among your guys, Dave, about what the foundation is on which you're going to build? That's, once you take it down to that foundation, that your core pieces as to what those pieces are, or is that a decision that will be made between now and the summer?
No, I think there's a lot of discussion still. I think we have a good idea of how we want to play and how we want to to build this, but you're not always going to get those pieces to land on your lap. So it's a bit like a chessboard. You might be moving in one direction and then have to change. But overall, there's a direction we want to go to, and we're going to do our best over the next couple months to start with the draft and start putting those pieces in that way.
Brewer and Lidstrom in the lineup tomorrow?
I would expect so. You know, there might be a little bit of issues with travel, but I would expect that they'd be in the lineup.
Well, it's another interesting trade deadline day. Not very many significant pieces changing ship, and I think it's fair to say that although you made a couple of moves, nothing significant in return. We thank you very much for your time on what is always a long and busy day. We appreciate it very much.
No problem. Thanks for having me on.
There's Dave Nonis, the Senior Vice President, General Manager of the Toronto Maple Leafs. Well,
what he can't see. And I tell you what, Nick Kiprios was bang on most of the day on our show. Detroit was the one place that expressed some interest in Phaneuf, that there was potentially a deal. And the stumbling block was Steven Weiss. Mm-hmm. The stumbling block was...
Bad contract coming back, right?
Bad contract coming back, which is why I asked the question. And they were not prepared to take the bad contract coming back. And probably the other thing was what other player the Red Wings were going to have to give up in order to make it work. But that, in essence, became the stumbling block for the Maple Leafs not being able to move Phaneuf today.
But isn't that going to be the issue in July as well, John? I believe that, and for all time, potentially, you know, really.
Yes, I think it will. I mean, these contracts aren't going to change. The business side isn't going to change that much. What does change for the Maple Leafs is the ability to help assist the other team pay. Mm-hmm. Right now, they're paying for two contracts, from that perspective, and they're only allowed to pay three max. It may be outlandish to even consider that they might have to pay for two in the summertime in Kessel and Phaneuf at some level. But the other issue for the Maple Leafs, and I know there's no appetite for this, is to carry that amount of money for the duration of the contracts. Would you want to carry $2 million, $3 million of the Phaneuf deal till 2020?
But realistically, that's what we're talking about, right?
Well, I think it has to be an option.
Yeah.
It has to be an option at this point.
I don't see how you move them if you don't.
Neither do I. What I think rang true today for the Maple Leafs is the reputation of these guys came back and bit them around the league. You know, this team gets scouted a great deal. The stories about what's going on with this team get, you know, regurgitated on a daily basis.
Well, it's got to scare you if you're another general manager.
It has to scare you. Totally. So, I mean, are you going to take this guy? What is he like? All these stories about, locker room distress, are they true? I mean...
Well, and you're marrying him, right? It's a long-term engagement here, right?
Absolutely. And, it could have a domino effect on the rest of your financial side and...
And your locker room.
And your locker room.
Yeah.
So let's put Lupul aside for a minute, because the three guys that are most talked about are Kessel, Phaneuf, and Lupul. And I only put Lupul aside because he's in a different category. It's not like he's cheap. He has injury issues that would scare some teams off, but mm-hmm. He's a step below these other two. Kessel and Phaneuf, is there a greater likelihood of one of these two rather than the other going someplace, let's say in the offseason?
I just think 30 goal scorers are hard to come by in this league.
And yet today, Stephen, if...
There wasn't a sniff though, right, as far as we
know? No, if you have a right-handed shooting defenseman, you had a chance to move him. Even defenseman, period, you had a chance to move him. So the need of mature defensemen almost is an unparalleled right now in this league.
Does that speak to where this game has gone in terms of defense over offense?
I must admit I haven't given it any thought that way, Bob. The game's more open than it has been in a long, long time. The speed of the game is important again.
But goal scoring is not where like it to be.
No, but I'm not sure that has anything to do with defensemen. I think that has more to do with goaltenders.
So you think this is situational, that there's a need for right-handed shooting defensemen.
Yes.
At a certain price, too. Because those guys were within a price range.
That's correct.
Right?
Sure, granted.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the bottom line for these two players is they're guaranteed so much money for so long, and they're not in the elite of the league.
Yep. And again, go back to the fact we don't think there's going to be any cap wiggle room for a while. Again, depending on what the Canadian dollar decides to do. But certainly looks like that could get worse before it gets better. Making those long-term commitments in a flat cap or a falling cap situation.
Right. Even when both of those contracts were signed, nobody contemplated an 80-cent Canadian dollar.
Well, that's right. You know, you have lots of room to make mistakes if the caps continues to go up. But it's the same thing applies, John, on the other side to the Leafs, that if you're going to take $2 million of Dion Phaneuf's contract every year for the remainder of his contract.
Right.
That's going to kill you if the cap's flat or going down. We're not going to cripple you, but it's not going to help.
You're going to end up working on a $68 million cap as opposed to a $70 million for your own team.
That's relevant if you're a cap team. And I submit still, this team shouldn't be anywhere near the cap in the midst of a rebuild. If they're near the cap in the midst of a rebuild, they've screwed this thing up.
You know, Elliot Friedman had a great graphic on Saturday on Hockey Night that the Leafs basically right now, it's total numbers. They have to budget for over $51 million of salary to players who aren't playing for the Toronto Maple Leafs. Now, $26 million of that is Horton.
Yeah.
But that's $25 million elsewhere that they're paying for right now, including Grabowski on his compliance buyout on the island of almost $14 million. I mean, these are dollars.
They're real dollars. They're not cap dollars, but
this is real
dollars.
Money.
Yeah.
You know, and so when MLSE and the board, they're not afraid to spend. They are not afraid to spend, and they're not afraid to take it off the bottom line. But it hasn't reflected very well in what happens on the ice for the team in blue and white.
Well, the first time, the Horton deal is one where their financial might actually give them, could potentially help them. There's not a lot of ways being rich these days helps you in the National Hockey League. You can help you in terms of your front office and things, but it doesn't help you in terms of your roster.
Right. But there's two ways to look at that. I mean, in the end, to Bob's point, if they're not a cap team, how much does it really help? And really what it did do more than anything is it got David Clarkson off the roster.
Yep.
Because he wasn't helping, and it was almost impossible to buy him out because all of his money was all in bonuses.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's – Dave Nonis is a really good hockey person, but Dave Nonis dug this grave that he's in. He mm-hmm. dug this grave. He was part of the Grave Digging Association.
He created it as much as anybody.
But what he was able to do with the Horton deal is he was put a little bit of dirt back in the grave.
Yeah.
A little bit of dirt. It may not be 6 feet deep right now, maybe only three.
What were the options with Kessel and Phaneuf? Let's go back a couple of years. Let's go back before they signed their contract extensions.
I can't remember yesterday. Why?
I mean, on one hand, it was easy to look at those two deals and say, that's crazy numbers. On the other hand, what were your options?
Well, you let them go to free agency or you trade them in their last year.
Yeah, go find somebody else.
No. Either you marry yourself to them or you get rid of them.
But they were paid to be what most people thought they were. There's...
Oh, I don't know about Phaneuf.
Oh, yeah. Well, someone else would have paid him that money, Bob.
Remember, they traded him. He was making a big ticket when he came here.
6'5".
Like, the Calgary deal was a big deal. He only got a small raise, you're right, in the last contract.
Yeah, but he got a raise to $7 million, which makes him among the 10 highest paid defensemen in the National Hockey League, and he's not one of the 50 best defensemen in the National Hockey League.
Yeah, but it's not about being best, it's about being available, right? And so if he's in a marketplace and he's the best guy available, which he probably, again, I have to go back and look, I don't remember that either, but, him as an unrestricted free agent in an open market, he would have got that money from somebody.
Maybe. I mean, we'll never know.
But the part of this goes back to, you can talk about analytics, you can talk about salary cap, you can talk about big money teams. It ends up being the judgment, the subjectivity of whether you think that player is a good player or
yes.
not.
Yeah, and a good fit right. for your team and all kinds of things, right?
And,
yeah.
And they thought, exactly what you said, 30 goal scorers don't, they're hard to find.
Boy, yeah.
And good 1-2 defensemen are hard to find. Now, Is Dion Phaneuf a good 1-2 defenseman? In their opinion, when they signed them, they obviously thought he was. I don't think you'd have that same conversation today and get the same answer. And you wonder about Kessel, but there's so many things on the periphery about Kessel. There's so many, like, I think it drives the world nuts that he looks overweight.
Mm-hmm.
This guy is a freak of nature. He's one of the great natural athletes I think we've ever seen in the National Hockey League. To me, the closest guy to him is Brett Hull. You know, it doesn't matter if you're a few pounds overweight. You can shoot the puck. You go to the place. You can skate. You've got a chance to be a great goal scorer.
He always tests right. Well, right? That's what everybody says.
Tests fantastic.
Yeah.
You know, the biggest challenge, to that point, Stephen, the biggest challenge in talking to any athletic therapist or a trainer, they say the test for Kessel won't be now. It will be that first major injury, and how long does it take for him to rehab?
Mm-hmm.
You know, will he have the discipline to rehab? But it all goes back to subjectivity. You know, the fact that, you know, Dave Nonis liked them. Claude Lazelle, Dave Poulin, who were on his staff, thought they were the right guys at the right time, and they signed them.
Mm-hmm.
And then it goes to, are those guys who are making those decisions the right guys to be making those decisions? And that's why Brendan Shanahan...
What's the answer to that?
Well, the answer to that is that's why Brendan Shanahan is here now. And now it's his job to ascertain whether he has the right group of people in place to make those decisions.
And then we got into the conversation in the last hour whether Brendan Shanahan is the right guy.
Well.
And the answer is, how do you know?
To be determined.
When you hire somebody who has no resume, you're taking a big chance. Now they hired a guy with a resume in Brian Burke.
And I think we all endorsed that. When that happened, we all thought Burke, that was the greatest thing.
Oh, I thought it was the wise thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
Brilliant. Coming out of Anaheim.
Did he get fired too soon? Would you rather have Brian Burke here right now?
I don't know. He had a big hand in painting them into this corner too, though, I believe. So
sure he did.
So I'm not sure.
Sure he did. But, I mean, again, it's a matter of confidence.
Yeah.
I like Dave Nonis as a guy.
Oh, so do I.
I got no idea whether he knows what he's doing.
No. I
think he knows what he's doing, but it's making the right decisions. And I think... In reflection, the Kessel Phaneuf deals, both of them, were really bad decisions.
But to go back to your question, I mean, it really is Shanahan Nonis or Burke Nonis? Which is a better combination for the Toronto Maple Leafs?
Well, and is Shanahan Nonis going to continue as a combination?
That's right.
Yeah.
But that's what I'm saying. I mean, that's you know, we're in this limbo right now with this organization.
At least with Brian, you had a track record, a history.
Yeah.
Whether you liked it or disliked it. There was a history there. And forget winning cups. You know, that can happen or not happen. He'd been around a long time. He'd done a lot of things. He had the pedigree to be the guy.
I would have hired him on the resume, what he did in Vancouver, how he turned that organization around. I would have done that.
Me too. Would you have hired Shanahan?
I think what we're seeing in Toronto on the hockey side is comparable to what James Dolan has done with the Knicks on the basketball side and brought in a great name, someone with a huge pedigree within the sport. And now you're wondering whether he has the knowledge or the ability or the stamina or the savvy to fit the job. Phil Jackson and the Knicks, Brendan Shanahan and the Maple Leafs. I think the jury's out.
But I guess the difference there is that Phil Jackson's biggest problem is James Dolan, in theory, right? Whereas do we think that Brendan Shanahan's biggest problem is the board here? I don't know. Is it?
I don't know. That's a great way. I mean, the one...
Who knows what goes on
there? The one constant, Stephen, in all of this, with what goes on in the Toronto Maple Leafs over the last blah, blah years, is the board. The board is the constant. The players aren't.
Mm-hmm.
Managers and coaches aren't.
But even the board has changed 100%.
Or virtually. But maybe the board's to blame. You know, I remember when the day that the teachers' pension fund guys had conniptions when their pictures were on the front page of the Toronto Star. They thought they were in anonymity. Now they were faces that people could recognize. It drove them nuts.
Who hired Shanahan?
Tim Leiwicki.
Where's he?
Vail. I don't know. I mean,
who hired Leiwicki?
The board? I know. The board, I mean, the board needs to be responsible for a little bit of this too.
Yeah.
Maybe a lot of this.
Well, I think a lot.
You know?
I mean, at least through osmosis. We'll take the break. I think Dale Tallon's going to join us in a bit. He didn't do a damn thing today, did he?
No, but he was busy this week.
He was busy. He wasn't busy today.
No, not today, but this week.
Well, we always like talking to him anyway. It's prime time.
Look at Yamir Yaga.
Jeremiah Jaguar.
Yeah.
On the Sportsnet radio and television networks.
It's the only time you have control of Bob McCowan.
Let's go.
Subscribe to Primetime Sports Podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan. On demand. On demand. Now, more of Bob McCowan and Primetime Sports on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Before the hour, McCowan with Brunt and Shannon. As we wait for Dale Tallon to join us, he may not. You want to talk a little bit about Calgary?
Well, I think it's fair to say the mild news of today when it comes to the trade front. I truly believe the biggest story out of today is the fact that the Flames announced that Mark Giordano has a torn bicep and he's out for the remainder of this season and he's out for 4 or 5 months.
Yeah, and they held that news, John. Like, it's interesting. Oh. Interesting how they played the market today.
Here's what on Friday night they played on the island.
He took
the warm up.
And you know, torn bicep is one of because it happens in football every once in a while.
Yeah,
and if a guy tears a bicep, it's one of those ones where there's no question, right?
Yeah.
That's a horrific injury. Usually, then the muscle can roll back up. It's gruesome, and the fact that the guy tried to play through it,
or at least he
got in uniform.
Yes,
you think that was a ruse?
I don't know. I want to ask Brad that if we ever get him on. I mean, that to me is, and they were always evasive. Like, hey, what's the latest on Gio? What more tests?
Mm-hmm.
Well, which is the way of saying no comment almost.
Yeah,
and then they flew him back to Calgary yesterday. More tests today, and as soon as the deadline was over, and Brad Treliving did his presser, the news came out. But that really is a huge blow. You'd think I assume that they were trying to find a way to get a defenseman to fill his spot
without anybody knowing you're desperate, right?
Right.
Yeah.
But I mean, I think the common sense was that everybody knew they were desperate.
Yeah, I guess the fact that he did skate in the warm up,
yeah,
kind of, you know, it wouldn't sound like a torn bicep.
Correct.
It might have sounded like something, but it's hard. You know, he's had a great year. Best offensive defenseman in the league. Let's put it that way.
Right now,
now, I'd say. It's kind of hard to see them. They may still hang in,
yeah,
but it's that I think, you know, so many their hopes are. They've been a great story this year, and he's been a huge part of that story.
Yeah, and here they are. They've got, LA's lost their last three in a row,
mm-hmm,
which has put Calgary back in a position of possibly being in that last wild card spot. But at the same time, they're in the midst of this huge road trip because the Brier is at the Saddle Dome, and it's put them in a huge, huge hole. The one thing from a Giordano perspective, so he's played 60 games, 60 of 82. Can he still get enough votes to win the Norris Trophy? Can he still get enough to be categorized as the best defenseman in hockey this year? I think it'd be hard.
Yeah, but you know, not impossible though, John. It depends. I'd have to think about to be one of the finalists for that award. You would think he'd still be on that list, wouldn't
you? And will he garner enough votes amongst the people who vote for the awards now that will put him on the top three?
Yeah.
Well, the Calgary story was an intriguing one, and we've talked about it on numerous occasions, whether this team has really been rebuilt to the level at which they've played, or whether it's possible they are just one of those one-hit wonders, like Colorado may well have been last year. And I don't know that this injury clarifies anything in either regard. Either way, it's still a process.
Oh, sure.
They're not there. They're not just too young. They still need some things. This will disappoint their fan base. But a fan base whose expectations were about as low as you can get at the beginning of the year.
What it probably did for Treliving was take a lot of pressure off him and explained to ownership why he didn't go for broke and make a couple of trades, saying, you know, our number one player is hurt. You know, it doesn't make sense in this season to go and trade some future assets just to try to get
to scrape in at eight. Yeah,
correct.
And probably not get there.
And that's right, and not get there. But, you know, I would suggest for most of this season, the duo of Giordano and Brody have been right there as maybe the most consistent and best defensive pair in the National Hockey League. They have been so much fun to watch this year. I think it's 10 or 11 come from behind third period victories, mm-hmm. which is fantastic.
It'd be interesting to know whether players, I know from time to time, we saw it with the Toronto Blue Jays last year at the trade deadline, and they did nothing. And the Blue Jays weren't exactly out of it yet, not totally.
No, they were very close at that point, actually. Still,
and there were players who quietly and not so quietly voiced displeasure with the fact that the Blue Jays didn't try and improve the club. I wonder how Calgary feels about it. Is it all mitigated by the fact that Giordano's not going to play the rest of the year?
I think in the heart, I think the players probably understand why the moves weren't made. I mean, they had probably two or three veteran parts that they could have considered moving, a guy like Matt Stajan or Mason Raymond. They did move Curtis Glencross for two draft picks, and that wasn't going to be any secret. Glencross wasn't re-signing there, and they weren't interested in re-signing him for the dollars that Glencross wanted. Their core of the young guys like Granlin and Goudreau and Monahan and they're and Buma, who's had a very good season. They're a fun team to watch, and I think that based on the fact that no Gio there to play the position that he did, I think the players probably more than any group understand that it was probably the right thing to do. And by the way, they made one more trade today. Sven Barchi, who was a first round pick a few years back, they got a second round pick from Vancouver for him. Not bad when you consider he and Barchi and Bob Hartley were not on the same page mm-hmm. most of the season, and he wasn't even playing with the team. So in the end, under the circumstances, the Glencross deal and the Barchi deal, I think Calgary did okay long term.
Yeah, futures deals in
correct.
Both cases, right?
Correct. Yeah.
You know, like I don't know how the fan base is going to feel. Like I think players kind of understand probably, although you know, and it depends. You know, they would understand the circumstances and probably understand exactly where they were, and you also understand the reality of trade deadline, which is that you can't necessarily work miracles in any case, even if you're trying. But I wonder about the fans. You know, just because it's been such a fun ride there this year, and there's a ton of excitement in Calgary about the team, mm-hmm. and you know maybe before the shoe dropped on Giordano, you would have been thinking, you know, we're just hanging on by our fingernails here. If we could just get a little something,
yeah,
you know, I can understand a fan in Calgary feeling that for sure.
Dale Talon joins us, the general manager of the Florida Panthers. Did you sleep in today, Talon? What happened?
Yeah, I took the day off.
Attaboy.
I played nine holes. Yeah, right. I wish I could sleep.
you know, you made your the Yager move a few days ago. He's played. He scored for you. That's all good. Were you close on anything today, do you think?
No, it was really, you know, we've expected that there wouldn't be a lot done. You know, we had a couple of UFAs that we had interest in maybe moving. And seeing what we could get back, but it just wasn't there. And most of the guys did their damage last week or the week, you know, a few days earlier. So it was a quiet day. And, you know, that's a good thing. It's a good sign for us because we've been sellers of late. And
that's right.
It's nice that we were able to maintain.
How much of it was that you didn't want to change your chemistry? I know the Yager deal changes the chemistry a lot, Dale.
John, that's a lot to do with it. We've got a good group. Really care for each other, and you know, we're 2 points out of the playoffs. We've gone through some tough battles as a group, and yeah, exactly. I really firmly believe in that. The chemistry is important, and keeping it together, and you know, it takes an army. You have to have a lot of players, and we've been battling through it, and we're going to continue to battle.
What's the impact of having Yager walk into that room? You know, a guy with his pedigree going into a pretty young room.
I see a jump in everyone's step. I mean, it's the first time in a while we've been buyers and have added a big piece like that. And our young guys have been really excited about it and watching him play the last two games. He's rejuvenated Huberdeau and Barkov, and Bukestad, and I've seen all our guys get upbeat about it. So it's a good message, and it's been phenomenal to watch him in two games with no practice and no time to get really settled. He's really done a nice job for us. It's fun to watch.
Were you at all concerned about a 43, I think he is, year-old player who clearly can't play at the pace he once did? The pace that he's at now being any kind of a detriment to your team, was that a concern?
No, not at all, because I wouldn't have done it. The games that he's played against us and the games that I've seen him play over the last couple of years, he's still, and what he's done in the playoffs in the past few years, he's still been a dominant player from the blue line in. And I just wanted our young guys to see what it takes, what effort it takes to become a great player. And so far, it's been excellent. So he's been really good with the kids. He's been telling them what to do and helping them and patting them on the back. And he's just been real positive in a couple of days. It's been amazing.
The one thing about, you talk about it, he may be slower, but he's still the same size as he always was, Dale. He's a big, big man.
I don't see any, you know, I mean, he's still, you know, I mean, he's brilliant protecting the puck. I haven't seen anybody that strong on the puck in a long time. And, you know, and it's really fun to watch.
We understand that every Florida fan, every player, certainly you, the coaching staff, everybody wants to get into the playoffs. Rank out of 10 its importance to this franchise right now.
Well, you always ask a tough question. You know, geez.
I'm sorry.
You know, like a mathematician or something?
How? What'd you have for lunch today? How's that?
I mean, I would say 7.75.
Okay.
3291. You know, we feel we're in a win-win here. You know, we're going to make a good run.
Yep.
We make it great. If we don't, we're going to get a really good pick to add to our young stable of players, and we're just going to get better. So, but I think we're going to be tough to beat here. We got 19 games left. We play Boston three times. They're, you know, it's not easy. We've got a tough schedule, but only 7 road games left.
Yep.
And 12 home games. And, you know, we've obviously got to get healthy and get Willie Mitchell and Dave Bolin back in the lineup and give it a shot. You know, I think there's a good opportunity here. And I just want these young guys to feel the experience of competing for a playoff spot, and better still if we get in.
We wish you good luck, and we thank you very much for the chat today. We'll talk again soon. Thanks, Dale.
Always a pleasure. I'll work on my gazintas for you.
Dale Tallon, the general manager of the Florida Panthers.
Tell you what, the phone on the golf cart works pretty well.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it?
Well, I don't know about that. Listen, if you live in South Florida, even a trade deadline day, you could get in 9 holes, can't you?
Do you think, you know, one of the guys they got from Anaheim was Danny Heatley.
Yeah.
Do you think Danny Heatley will ever appear in a Florida Panther game?
It's hard to imagine.
I know. But when you think about it, this guy, talk about pedigree. I mean, this guy was at one point a 50-goal scorer in this league.
No,
they're just falling off the face of the earth.
It's an interesting formula they've worked in Florida, though, isn't it? That Talon's worked.
Yeah.
You know, because there was a fair bit of skepticism there. And, you know, right now they're nibbling at the heels of the Bruins for the playoffs.
I don't know. Maybe it's just me. Maybe I just like his fiery demeanor. But he's a pretty good general manager.
I don't, you know, there are a
he's
few,
near the top of the food chain for me.
Having that eye for talent. We talked about subjectivity. Eye for talent. Talon and Mark Bergevin, who worked very closely together in Chicago. It's no coincidence. Both teams are on the way up.
We're going to take the break. We'll have more guests next hour. Bob Ryan will be among them. Shannon may be here. He may not be here. Brunt will be here. I may be here. Maybe not be here. You better come back and find out. This is Primetime.